Yeah, I'm going to call this meeting of the Government Operations Committee to order. We are not quite at a quorum, but so Representative Dabney, we can take testimony at this point, so I'm going to just begin with that. So
okay.
the first bill before us is House File 2864. Could you please present your bill, Representative Dabney?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. I appreciate the opportunity to present House File 2864, creating an Office of Outdoor Recreation in Minnesota, as many of our other states in the nation are doing so. Those states are as close as Wisconsin next door that wants to compete with us for outdoor recreation enthusiasts, and their tax dollars, their business dollars, and their opportunities for fun, and as distant from us as Utah and Maryland. These are usually small offices of 1 to 3 people who serve an important role in marketing outdoor recreation opportunities in the state to both residents and to potential tourists from other states, support equitable and inclusive access to outdoor recreation opportunities to an increasingly diverse population, work with state, local, and federal agencies in a coordination role, kind of as a hub, as I see it, for advocacy for outdoor recreation and access. Assisting in our state, it would be DEED, the Department of Employment and Economic Development, in supporting job and business development in the outdoor recreation industry. Collecting data, because we build better policy when we have good data on access to outdoor recreation in the state, including access for people with some sort of disability that may limit their access or other underserved populations, and working with educational institutions to meet workforce needs in the outdoor recreation industry. House File 2864, in the language currently in the Environment Finance Omnibus Bill, proposes that in its first year, this office create a strategic plan for the office in consultation with Explore Minnesota's Tourism Council, the commissioners of DNR, DEED, Health, and Transportation, as well as legislative leaders in the environment area. This allows the Minnesota Office of Outdoor Recreation to be the Minnesota Office of Outdoor Recreation, not an off-the-shelf proposal, but one that responds to Minnesota needs, Minnesota opportunities, and the unique legacy of outdoor recreation here in Minnesota, as well as looking forward to both participation and economic development. Mr. Chair, I think that's a brief overview of House File 2864.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. We are at a quorum, so I will officially call this meeting to order. Do I have a motion to approve the minutes of the April 11th government operations hearing?
So moved.
Representative Elkins moves approval of the minutes. Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. The minutes are approved. I will move that House File 2864 be recommended to pass and be referred to the General Register.
Thank you.
Yep, thank you, Representative Chair Dabney. We are on a fairly constricted time frame here, but I do want to make sure everybody who wants to has an opportunity to speak, so I'm going to ask testifiers to keep their comments short to about 2 minutes. So if there's anyone who would like to speak on House File 2864, please come forward. Actually,
yeah.
I do.
Mr. Chair, yes.
Yes, did you have people?
I do have testifiers, and I'm not sure of the order here, but it includes Jill Sims from the National Marine Manufacturers Association, John Wooden of River Valley Power and Sport, and Michelle Teagan from the YMCA of the Greater Twin Cities, and the man from REI whose name, I'm sorry, is escaping me, Steve. So
okay, that sounds like a great order. So Ms. Sims, would you? Okay, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Freiberg and members. My name is Michelle Teigen. I'm the executive director of one of our YMCA overnight camps for the Greater Twin Cities YMCA. We're the second largest nonprofit organization in the country, the third largest in the world, and I represent over 4,000 employees, 400,000 customers, and a network of partners working worldwide to strengthen the communities we serve. We work side by side with neighborhoods to make sure that everyone, regardless of age, income, or background, has the opportunity to learn, grow, and thrive. To that end, we have elevated the importance of getting children, families, singles, and the elderly outside, as we've seen the data that indicates nature makes a positive impact on mental, physical, and emotional health. We also know that there is a challenge right now facing our children and families, 40-year childhood. So if we look at the past and where we are now, we recognize that there's a whole generation of young people, primarily children and families, that are disconnected from their natural world. And these numbers only increase in communities of color. This trend has serious implications on the health and welfare of the customers we serve, the future of the outdoor places we love, and the future of Minnesota's outdoor recreation economy. I want to speak briefly, and I'm going to cut my notes down here quickly for time's sake, a little bit about why the YMCA is invested in this bill and how we see it's going to make a difference. We know and have heard that low-income children, families, and children of color have less access to high-quality outdoor recreation programs and green space than their peers. These facts widen our health gaps, educational outcomes, and create concern about who will be the future stewards of our natural places. We are eager to engage with our outdoor communities, with recreation, for what we do within the YMCA. But if we fail to create the desire and love of these spaces and populations, our communities of color, immigrants, and newcomers, then we fail to engage, preserve, and protect our beloved wild spaces in the state of Minnesota when these communities are not at the table. For 160 years, the YMCA has worked diligently to partner with organizations throughout the Twin Cities to create an equal opportunity for all. And we see this Office of Recreation as an opportunity to bring many organizations together to the table. We know that the DNR, Explore Minnesota, do great work, but they are only two of the many that could be coming together to make a difference. We hope within the YMCA that you will stand alongside us as we create equitable opportunities for all Minnesota residents and its visitors. We know as a collaborator in our communities, the YMCA filling many, many communities with our YMCA spaces and camps, that collaboration is not easy. We do it every day. And when we know that children are receiving less than 10 minutes of outside time, restricted recess and lack of funding to be able to access outdoor education that is so fantastic and held within the YMCA.
Thank you.
And that only minimizes in communities of color. So I stand for the YMCA and just want to let you know that this is an opportunity for us to gather folks together to do great work in environmental and outdoor recreation. Thank you so much for this opportunity.
Thank you. Appreciate your testimony, Ms. Tigan. Next testifier, please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chairman Freiberg and Vice Chair Salk and members of the committee and Representative Dabney for allowing me the opportunity to give you my perspective. My name is John Wooden, and I live in Red Wing, Minnesota. Like 70% of our fellow Minnesotans, I'm an outdoorsman, a hunter, a fisherman, a boater, and a power sports enthusiast. I'm extremely fortunate that I'm able to further foster the enjoyment of the great outdoors through my business, River Valley Companies. We own and operate seven retail locations across Minnesota in Rochester, Red Wing, and on Lake Minnetonka. Among the many outdoor recreational product lines our company retails are brands like Minnesota-based Polaris Industries and Alumacraft Boats. I offer this background because I can testify firsthand on both the enjoyment and economic impact of outdoor recreation in our great state of Minnesota. I'm before you today to express my full support for HF 2864, which would create a Minnesota Outdoor Recreation Office. Outdoor recreation is an essential part of our country's economy. According to the 2018 report by the U.S. Bureau of Economic Analysis, the outdoor recreation economy accounts for 2.2% of the United States gross domestic product. While that 2.2 might not sound like much, it signifies the outdoor recreational economy is larger than other industries like utilities, 1.5, and on pace with telecommunications, 2.4. It is also growing faster than the economy as a whole. Outdoor recreation supports 4.6 million jobs across the country, and right here in Minnesota, outdoor recreation is responsible for $16.7 billion in consumer spending and 141,000 jobs. Recreational boating in our state alone accounts for $3.1 billion in annual economic impact and supports nearly 11,000 jobs, 100-plus and growing, of which are employed by my company. As a testament to the growing outdoor recreation and boating industries, River Valley just opened an all-new marine center in Rochester this weekend. From a business standpoint, and I speak for nearly every outdoor recreational business in the state and across the country, we're experiencing a tremendous shortage of qualified workers to fulfill our growing employment needs. I currently have 20-plus jobs open across my locations, and that's just a fraction of the outdoor industry's current open positions. It's my hope that the new Office of Outdoor Rec will not only shine a light on the powerful economic contributor, that is the outdoor recreation industry, but it will also help demonstrate the importance of the economic considerations for our businesses, such as the shortage of employees and the need to create skilled job training opportunities within the boating and outdoor economy as a whole. Like many other states have already done, creating an outdoor rec office will provide a focal point for all Minnesota to engage a new and diverse generation of Minnesotans with the outdoors and to contribute to the health and well-being of our children and communities. Simultaneously, it will focus on growing and supporting local communities and local economies through recreation in the great outdoors, while utilizing the expertise of all of our state agencies and resources. I appreciate your consideration of these efforts to increase and improve the growing sector of Minnesota's economy and ask you to support HF 2864. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony and for coming up here. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hello, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee and Representative Dabney. My name is Steve Voltz, and I'm the store manager of REI in Roseville, Minnesota. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today in support of the bill, a proposal of a recreational outdoor recreation office in Minnesota. REI strongly supports the bill, and we do it on behalf of the co-op, including our 350 employees, as well as almost 500,000 members in the state. Our shared connection to the outdoors is a part of the story of this country, and it's really at the heart of Minnesota's heritage. At REI, we believe that the freedom to enjoy the great outdoors should be fundamental to all future generations, not just the faraway places that we dream about when we're talking about our neighborhoods, our towns, our communities. The good news is there is great demand for access to the outdoors. According to the Outdoor Industry Association, 70% of Minnesotans went outside to recreate at least once last year, and that's well above the national average, which is 50%. Also, recreation supports our economy. As others have talked about, per the OIA, recreational accounts for 140,000 jobs in Minnesota, and the economic activity generates $1.4 billion in state and local taxes. This is a sector with sustainable jobs and for urban and rural communities. The bad news is many people face challenges getting to the outside. On average, Americans spend 95% of their lives indoors. Kids are spending 7 hours a day on average in front of a screen. Adults get 11 hours a day of screen time. Also, there are great towns and places with recreation potential that just aren't fully realized. We have multiple agencies that care about connecting people to the outdoors, Explore Minnesota, DNR. Our educators, even healthcare health professionals, understand the value of time outdoors. But it's not clear all government is coordinated. That's what this bill would address. Like a dozen other states have done, the bill would create an office that assures coordination across agencies, synergies, and efficiencies across those agencies. The office would make sure the departments that want to connect people to the outdoors are coordinated and getting the maximum return on investment on taxpayer dollars. REI fully supports that type of efficiency in government, especially when it's aimed at coordinating efforts to get people outside. So thanks again for the opportunity to speak today.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to speak on House File 2864? Welcome. Please come forward. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. My name is John Edmond. I'm the director of Explorer Minnesota Tourism. Mr. Chairman, members, I just first of all want to be here to say I support the concepts of the creation of the Office of an Outdoor Recreation and a lot of the purposes that are outlined. We feel that there needs to be some additional discussion with other agencies and stakeholders to truly determine what are the priorities. If you look at the list of the duties for the Office of Outdoor Recreation, it's a very long list, and there are potentially some expenses associated with that. So we feel that there needs to be that discussion with the stakeholders before that's developed. And the dollars, I believe, that are appropriated for this effort probably only scratch the surface in terms of what is needed. There's more resources that are needed to accomplish the goals of this legislation, and the other point that I'd like to make is to make sure that while this particular legislation, I believe, is attached to the Explore Minnesota appropriation budget, if there are additional dollars that are required, I hope it just does not come out of the limited base budget for Explore Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Edmond. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself.
Chairman, members of the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources, and Lake Director Edmund. The DNR does have some concerns about this bill as well. While we appreciate the concepts behind it, we do feel a larger discussion should take place, one Minnesota conversation with all of the stakeholders in Minnesota about what this office should do before it is introduced, before it's created. While we do appreciate the addition of the new language in Subdivision 4 with the strategic plan, developing a strategic plan does not bring into consultation the YMCA or any of the outdoor recreation industry members. It just says the director must consult with Explore Minnesota Tourism Council, commissioners of natural resources, health, transportation, employment and economic development, and the legislature. We feel a larger conversation needs to take place with all users of the Outdoor Recreation Act in Minnesota to talk about what this office does, what it should do, and how it should look like, rather than to hire a person, create the office, and then have them create the strategic plan. Again, as we discussed, we do support the concept. We feel we're getting the cart in front of the horse, so to speak. We would rather have a conversation with all of the participants in the outdoor recreation participants in Minnesota, silent sports, motor sports, hunting, fishing, angling, camping, and then come back with a proposal to establish the office. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Meyer. Is there anyone else who would like to testify on House File 2864? Okay, seeing none, I'll close testimony. Member discussion, Representative Lilly.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Chair, I kind of was hoping to talk to the DNR a little bit while they were here, but I had an opportunity to go to the DNR roundtable earlier this year, and I expressed my concern at that time to Mr. Myers, and I love what they're doing. Much of what they were doing there, they had a great big round table at a hotel in Bloomington, and but most of the focus was outdoors, yes, but it was focused on hunting and fishing and those sort of things. And what we're hearing today, and maybe DNR's got the message, because everything he said was, you know, talking about one Minnesota, all outdoors, the cart before the horse, all that stuff, but really there's so much more to the outdoors, and I'm sure that's what has driven you to bring this forward, is because traditionally the DNR has focused a little bit on, in my mind, on hunting and fishing. And I know in their parks they're really doing a good job with legacy dollars and different things and getting people out to learn how to camp and canoe and those sort of things. But there's, to have this great big round table and not to have nothing about biking, nothing about camping, nothing. So to me it was a bit of a disappointment, so I'm going to vote for your bill today, and I think maybe there has to be more discussion, and I hope you're bringing it, you know, to the table, you know, if this doesn't pass, and hope the DNR is getting the message. But Minnesota needs to, I mean, that is a strong future that, yeah, people want to get outdoors, but it might be different than it was 50 years ago. So anyways, thank you, Mr. Chair, for bringing this forward.
Thank you, Representative Lilly. Representative Salk, did you, or Representative Lee? Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay, Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Chair Dabney, for bringing this forward, too. And like I've mentioned in the Environment Finance Committee, I really appreciate the first purpose being for working towards equitable and inclusive access to the outdoors. And many of my constituents and constituents throughout the state of Minnesota who are in districts similar to mine, we don't really have access to the outdoors. And to Chair Lilly's point, you know, how could we start looking at the outdoors through different lenses and not just the traditional fishing and hunting? And so I just want to say thank you for bringing this forward.
Okay. Any additional member discussion? Okay. Seeing none, any closing remarks, Representative Dabney?
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. I think the argument has been well made. Let's create a forum for that conversation to occur. And with that, I ask for your support.
Okay. Thank you. With that, I will renew my motion that House File 2864 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the General Register. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
No.
Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you. Okay, I thought I saw Representative Bernardi come in a while ago.
She's over here.
Okay. No, he did. Quickly. Yeah. That's okay. Yeah, Representative Bernardi, while you approach, I will move that House File 2849 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the general register. As I mentioned, we're in a bit of a time crunch because of conference committees, but please present your bill.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I want to, I'll be brief, and then you can just let me know if you have questions. The bill we're bringing before you is a bipartisan bill in the House and the Senate, and it helps the Argosy students who had the unexpected closure of Argosy College that happened earlier this spring. And this bill helps get their spring tuition back in their pockets, the state grant that was supposed to go to them that Argosy didn't get to them, as well as some other state programs that to make them whole. So that's what the bill does. It's important we get this. I'm glad you want to move this quickly because we want to get the money back to the students as soon as possible because they're making decisions on how to move forward.
Thank you, Representative Bernardi. And just for members' interest, the provision in the bill that is within the jurisdiction of the Government Operations Committee is on lines 3.10 and 3.11 related to rulemaking. So is there anyone who would like to testify regarding House File 2849? Okay, seeing none, any member discussion? Okay, Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I did sit in on the committee when the test, both the students and teachers were testifying. And it was, I mean, it's really heartbreaking to hear about what's happening to these, both to the teachers and students. So I definitely encourage a yes vote for this bill.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Mason. Any additional member discussion? Any closing remarks, Representative Bernardi?
No, we thank you for your support. Okay.
Thank you. With that, I will renew my motion that House File 2849 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the General Register. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Representative Bernardi. Okay. Sure. Representative Noor. While you approach, I will recommend that House File 2852 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. If you could please present your bill, Representative Noor.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. This bill is about Minnesota Innovation Collaborative, which is a new program that is meant to encourage support development of new private sector technologies and support science and technology policies under Minnesota Statute Section 3222. So this is an opportunity, members, to have startups get support to do technology programs in the state of Minnesota. This is something that I believe will spur a lot of economic growth and enable individuals to come to the state so that they can invest in technology and we can support them so that they can afford to pay for their rent, pay for their healthcare, pay for their supplies or anything that they may need. This also requires the individual to provide resources to show that they are able to do the work. With me today is the Commissioner for Deed. Commissioner will walk us through the process. Mr. Chair, if you'll allow the Commissioner to present.
Okay. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, thank you. My name is Steve Grove. I'm the Commissioner of the Department of Employment and Economic Development. It's a pleasure to be here with you all today to talk about the Minnesota Innovation Collaborative. This is a new idea. We think it's an idea whose time has come. When you look at where the future of our state's economy is headed and where the highest potential for growth is, it is in these innovation sector jobs and in the startup ecosystem here in Minnesota. And so we have taken a lot of time to talk to venture capitalists, to talk to startups across the state to figure out what could the government do to make this a better state for startup growth and to reduce some of the risk aversion of starting a new company and to help new entrepreneurs accelerate their growth as startup founders in Minnesota. And so the Minnesota Innovation Collaborative seeks to do just that. It brings together a series of incentives to incentivize people to start companies, things like health insurance stipends for a year to make it a little easier to leave a comfortable job and start a new one, R&D grants to help accelerate the research process to test a new idea and get it ready for the market, business liquidity grants to set up shop and actually have a place to build your business when you start out, And it also includes a series of educational and training grants focused on helping entrepreneurs who have a great idea but might not have a background on how to put together a business plan or pitch a venture capitalist or build a technology team, get the education they need to turn their really great idea into a reality and build a company from it. And when you look at the amount of money that Minnesota spends in economic development across the board for industries like agriculture, manufacturing, mining, forestry, all money well spent, it's over $600 million a year. And we don't spend hardly anything on startups. In fact, our angel tax credit is another thing that we have seen go by the wayside. We hope we can bring that back too. But these are this is an area that we want to grow, and we need to put our money against it to ensure that we can grow our startup ecosystem in the state. Now, the reason that we're here in GovOps today is there's a piece of the Minnesota Innovation Club that involves an advisory board. This advisory board will be made up of individuals outside of DEED who would advise us on administering these grants and programs. I'm going to walk through that advisory board briefly so you understand how that it would be structured. We want to use the open appointments process. And again, we want to do this because we think that DEED needs assistance and ecosystem support from experts outside of the agency to determine where the most momentum is in this marketplace. We want to have it be a very transparent and effective board. It'll be made of 10 members. Appointed again through that open appointment process. Six of them have to be from the private sector, and they will advise the team that makes up the Innovation Collaborative in the administration of the grants. That team will be made up of three FTEs, an executive director, a manager, and an administrator. So some of the key functions of that board will be, again, to advise the executive director, to provide key relationships and connectivity to statewide efforts and initiatives, to review and make recommendations of funding decisions to the department, to review and make recommendations of funding decisions related to educational grants, and they'll be expected to review grant protocols and provide the expertise and feedback to the executive director. We're looking for people that will be ambassadors for technology and small business development, and to think about the long-term viability of this initiative. We know that the true driver of the startup ecosystem in the state is going to be the entrepreneurs themselves. And the role we have at DEED, we think, is to fill gaps the private sector wouldn't be incentivized to fill. Ultimately, we think if we can jumpstart an initiative like this to grow our startup ecosystem, a lot of these things could be transferred to the private sector or the nonprofit sector in the future. But getting it started with a board like this, we think, is really critical. So that's the makeup of the advisory board and how it is set up. We do not anticipate any rulemaking for this initiative. We do not anticipate any costs for the board. We don't anticipate spending any stipends to compensate the board for participating. We do want that board to be diverse, both in terms of background and geography, and really to be a very active board to help us ensure that we are deploying this capital effectively. So thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to testify on House File 2852? Welcome to the committee. I feel a little strange asking you to identify yourself, but please do so for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Chair, members, my name is Lily Melander. I'm the Government Relations Manager for Medical Alley Association. I greatly appreciate the opportunity to briefly share our support for this legislation establishing the Minnesota Innovation Collaborative. As the association representing the health innovation and care industry across Medical Alley, we work with hundreds of innovators in the healthcare space each and every year. The Minnesota Innovation Collaborative would be a tremendous asset to them, to us, and to entrepreneurs in all industries throughout the state. This past year, Medical Alley Association convened working groups composed of healthcare leaders from all sectors to put together a 10-year vision with the goal of Medical Alley being recognized as a global epicenter of health innovation and care. These working groups concluded that in order to realize this vision, there were four major challenges that needed to be addressed. One of those challenges is that Minnesota's environment for supportive entrepreneurial ventures must improve to capture and sustain leadership position. The Minnesota Innovation Collaborative is a huge step towards meeting this challenge. The MIC will serve a hub for fostering startup growth in all sectors and in every corner of the state through providing direct grants to innovators as well as education and outreach to current and future entrepreneurs. The MIC seeks to meet startups where they are and with what they need. Establishing an advisory board made up of representatives from the business and higher education will enable the MIC to continually provide the most proven, cutting-edge guidance to startups no matter their challenge, as well as help plot the course to stronger the public and private partnerships for continuing to move the MIC message forward. Medical Alley strongly supports this legislation.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Melander. Is there anyone else who would like to testify on House File, 2852? Okay, seeing none, member discussion. Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not sure to which of the testifiers, but we're starting up a new entity here. It looks like we're going to spend $1.7 million a year on administration. I'm curious, how are you going to objectively measure the outcome? Because once this has started, how do we know that it's been successful objectively? Thank you.
Mr. Representative, I can take that one. Please, Representative Norris, chime in if you'd like. I think it's a really important question. And I think when you look at the kinds of success metrics that most startup ecosystems take a look at, is oftentimes the number of startups that exist, the amount of venture capital that comes into the community. We have some expertise indeed in measuring success of such programs like the Angel Tax Credit. For example, we know that 51% of the venture capital that came into the state in its final year of administration was from outside the state, which was a great objective to attain because we wanted to make sure we were getting venture capital from outside of Minnesota to put our state in the national spotlight for startups. We will put together, I think, some similar thoughts for a program like this. And a part of that would be talking with the advisory board about where they think, what they think success looks like. But ultimately, we want to see startup success. The unique thing about startups is that, of course, it's a risk. You're taking a chance in a new business. And so its success or failure is more in question because you're trying something new. And I think that's something we want Deed to get more comfortable stimulating in the economy, because that's where a lot of the high job growth is coming in terms of the ecosystem effects of these businesses. So I think it's both the success of the startups themselves, but also the numbers of jobs that are created around them as they grow.
Okay. Follow-up, Representative Vogel?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So when would you expect that to be accomplished, those objective criteria? Because, again, we're looking at over $1.7 million just for administration. When would you expect this to be accomplished if this thing is put in place?
Commissioner Grove.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think that one of the things that, if I'm understanding your question correctly, you're wondering when we would be able to set the objectives and then know if we succeeded. I think that will take a little time in that first year, but we want to move quickly. And, you know, the long-term viability and success of startups sometimes takes years to achieve, and that's why venture capital as a financing model exists, because it takes a much longer-term view. And so many of these startups who succeed, at least in part by our support through programs like these, may not see that success for 5-10 years, but we want to take a longer view as well for these programs to make sure that they're really effective.
Okay. Representative Vogel?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry, I didn't write down. Where is this going from here?
Ways and Means.
Okay. To be referred to another committee, or I know you.
Yeah.
And the reason I bring that up, Mr. Chair, is I don't remember that this bill has ever been heard before in a different committee, but maybe it has and I'm missing it.
Yeah, I believe this is a clone of a bill that was heard in the Jobs Committee. Do I have that right, Representative Neuer?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Yeah. Commissioner presented the mic to the Jobs Committee.
Mm-hmm. Representative Vogel?
So thank you, Mr. Chair. So I do have really serious concerns, like I said, relative to the we're setting up a new entity here that's spending $9 million over the biennium, of which almost $2 million is probably going to go to administration. And I just wanted to make sure that it's been well vetted in different committees rather than just coming here and being part of the bill and then just going to Ways and Means and all of a sudden we're spending. I mean, we have big conversations on the Legislative Budget Office spending $1.5 million a year, which actually – when you're looking at $50 billion budgets, it makes to me a lot of sense. Here we're going to spend $10 million, and we really don't have what I'm hearing is anything objectively set yet. By the time we get there, maybe it's going to be looking at another $9 million or more. So I just didn't know the path so that we really flesh this thing out, make sure that we know where we're going with it.
Mm-hmm. Well, like I said, the financial provisions have been heard in the Jobs Committee, which has jurisdiction over Deed. So it seems like it's been heard in the appropriate places, I guess I would say.
And Mr. Chair,
Representative Noor?
It was also in the omnibus bill that was had in the Jobs Committee.
Mm-hmm. Sure, and Ways and Means as well. Yeah, good point. Okay, thank you. Representative Sauk?
Two lines of questioning. One is on the issue of what you're going to produce or build in this activity. I didn't hear much said about a collegial environment and or a cross peer group kind of thing. I know that we've got a fairly robust set of entrepreneurs that are running both an incubator and then a work environment. And a key component of that has turned out to be advice, in the collegial part of advice from a couple of extraordinarily successful entrepreneurs that have spun off great big companies that have been very successful, plus then a number of people that are active inside of the community of entrepreneurship. And so the fact that this environment exists was actually more to the point of what they produced than set number of things that they could report on. Can you comment on how that, I should have heard that when you were talking about the structure of this? Maybe I just missed it, or I'm not an entrepreneur, so I can miss words that are pretty meaningful and easy.
Okay. Mr. Grove?
Yeah, sure.
Keep your answer brief. We've got a few more member questions.
Got it. Yep, fantastic point. Totally on point. I think that the ecosystem around the startup community in this state is critical. And we think that we want to contribute to growing that ecosystem. This isn't about government trying to take that over or play an outsized role, but to be a player. And when you look at the states that have seen extraordinary growth in their startup ecosystems, California, Texas, New York, you look at the ecosystem in Boston, even Austin and Seattle, every one of those states, their government has gotten involved and done some things to really spark growth. Put a flag out to say entrepreneurs welcome here, and it has fundamentally changed those ecosystems. Minnesota hasn't done that as much, and I think now's the time to do it, and it is about supporting that ecosystem and support that you outlined in your question.
Representative South?
Yeah, I have one more line, probably just similar but related to that, to representatives' questions about reporting. This is one of those cases where I would say report something. Don't just be silent. Because even if you choose that the wrong things are being metric or gauged, the reporting is the activity that then spawns better thinking and or future thinking in this kind of a thing. So I would suggest that even if it seems like, well, these are the wrong goals or these are whatever criticism of the goals or of what you're trying to report something in these kind of efforts oftentimes creates a better line for what's going to happen, and it gives you a more mature entity.
Mm-hmm.
Is that
Representative, I couldn't agree more, and I think as my answer said earlier, I think looking at the amount of startups that are created, the amount of venture capital that comes in, the amount of growth those startups see, all those things are things we should measure, and I think once we've gotten them in line real quickly, we should report them out very fast and keep iterating. That's the way of the entrepreneur, is to keep iterating on them. So
Thank you.
Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Neuer. I want to thank you first for bringing this forward. This is really an incredible opportunity, I think, and as we know, small businesses are, in fact, one of the largest employers in our state. They create tons and tons of jobs, and not only that, they are the 3Ms and Medtronics of the future, so I really want to thank you for doing that. I also wanted to say, you know, I've been a passionate supporter of small businesses and innovation for a very long time, and was a part of one of those innovative organizations, and was the editor of a small business magazine. And I know how difficult the challenges are for small businesses, where we often wear all the hats, and yet we have to learn how to innovate, how to raise capital, how to market ourselves, how to do the day-to-day operations, how to pay our taxes, all of those things. So I really fully appreciate this. Two quick points. I know we've spent there's been a little bit of discussion about the investment in this. I know we've spent a great deal of money to foster things like getting the movie industry to do filming here in Minnesota. I would argue that creation of jobs from small businesses might be an extremely worthwhile investment, and may actually pay dividends far beyond that. But my one question to you, which I did not see in the bill, I see in the definitions we have a great deal of delineation around small businesses, women-owned businesses, minority, et cetera. What role will some of those organizations, if you could enlighten us, will play in this bill?
Representative Noor?
Mr. Chair and members, I think that's a good question. As the commission had already elaborated, the advisory board will include different groups from different community so that we can have a robust discussion about what the future of technology looks like. And I'm assuming the process whereby we do support small businesses, some of them who have been granted the SBR and SBBR, I don't know if you're familiar with those big terminologies, but the key point is we're trying to encourage those who have left behind in terms of technology to have a process where they can now apply for resources to do a startup economic. This will open the door for so many people who have been left out for many, many years, and this is an opportunity for them to take advantage of this type of a program to come up with technologies that will support them and become part of the ecosystem.
Thank you. Representative Kwong.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And there was some reference I heard to California, which has a huge amount of venture capital local. So there's quite a bit of organic, innovative growth in portions of that state. What specifically this bill, what was it modeled off of WIT program? And if you can tell us the, you know, some familiarity with what state programs it's been modeled off of.
Don't know who wants to take that one. Commissioner Grove?
Mr. Representative, it's a great question. We looked at what a lot of different states had done. California was in there. Massachusetts was in there. We even looked at what's happened in cities and states and provinces outside of the U.S. But then we also just spent a lot of time just talking to entrepreneurs and venture capitalists here to figure out what the unique challenges are here that a unique Minnesota solution should tackle. And one of the things we heard a lot of in Minnesota is that we are blessed to have an extraordinary Fortune 500 set in this state, and it's an amazing thing. But the downside of that, in some sense, is that if you are an engineer coming out of college, it's very easy to get a pretty high-paying job at Fortune 500 right away, and the risk aversion to starting something on your own is a little higher because you've got these other opportunities for employment. So you hear that again and again and again when you talk to startup founders here and who are trying to hire and grow their businesses, is that there's a little bit of risk aversion in the market. And so some of those incentives that we built into that first piece were built off of that insight of how do you tackle that risk aversion in a more in a thoughtful way to reduce it a little bit and inspire more people to start companies.
Mr. Chair, I didn't hear any specific state to which this was modeled off of, just that they looked around. Was there any utilization of building off of the incubator in innovation that comes out of the U and out of in the Rochester area where there are, you know, LIM Labs, and there are a great many of new companies with innovative technologies utilizing new technologies in different ways. Can you tell us how that maybe was put into the bill?
Commissioner Grove?
Mr. Chair, Representative, absolutely. And I've spent time in Rochester meeting with the folks at LIM Labs and spent time with the U as well. The U is hugely supportive of this bill. John Stavig and his team over at the Research Center there have been huge supporters of it. I do think that the connection to an RD university is important. You asked about examples. I did mention a few, but I'll mention another. The city of Chicago put a lot of money into the starting of a co-working space there that kind of brought the ecosystem of Chicago's entrepreneurs together at the old Mercantile Mart down there in downtown Chicago. They put a little money aside for some accelerator programs and some education that helped that startup ecosystem grow. 3 or 4 years later, they were able to step back, and the thing's running on its own now. But again, they had the foresight to put some capital in early to get that ecosystem rolling, and they're reaping the benefits for it. Now Chicago is, I think, undoubtedly the strongest startup hub in the Midwest. And if we want to compete against hubs like that, we need to do things ourselves, too, to make sure we're on the map.
Representative Kwong.
I didn't hear of where an example of a similar advisory board was put together.
Oh, yeah.
And that type, I mean, in other words, the actual functionality that you're coming up with, is it innovative and not something that you're building off of something that's already there? Or you're saying they did good, we use this as a framework. I'm trying to understand that, you know, part of the evolution of this bill.
Yeah, I, Representative Quam, I did hear him say that they also consulted with entrepreneurs in Minnesota just to try to, you know, it wasn't copied wholesale from another template, but they wanted it to
Mr.
be
Chair,
to Minnesota. As well.
You're referencing. Thank you, Mr. Chair. You're referencing the part that was relevant to this committee,
okay.
And that is a generation of, you know, this board, this group, this advisory commission, however you want to call it. And so I'm trying to understand
did it just pop as a light bulb, or are there similar entities around? And I've heard nothing to indicate that there was a similar entity of which they, you know, plagiarized or used to build off of. And that's what I'm trying to understand. You know, they keep talking about all these wonderful things of these, their actions that would have come out of some entity. We're creating an entity. That's what this committee's got the jurisdiction over. So I'm trying to understand exactly where it came from, if it came from adapting something, or it was just a wallet popped into our heads.
Commissioner Grove, would you like to try to take a third and final try at it?
Mr. Representative, I think I understand your question now. You're referring specifically to the advisory board function itself, which, of course, is the thing we went into more detail here, given this is the GovOps committee. That piece of it is to me, a really smart and thoughtful piece of what we're doing. It doesn't cost any money. But it's not the core of what this whole initiative is. The core of this initiative is the incentives and training programs I mentioned. The advisory board is a critical piece to make sure we make the right decisions around those programs. And so we use advisory boards indeed across a whole host of programs. I'm sure that other startup programs and incentive groups across the country do as well. But we didn't just sort of make up the process by which we would create it. There's obviously the open appointments process that the governor uses is the thing that we're recommending that we use. It's a tried and true method that's used across state government, and we think it's the best way to run this program too.
Well, Mr. Chair, I didn't hear an actual answer of how they generated. You know, I heard, you know, fluffy words. I was hoping for actual, you know, the appointment process that. You know, I ran it through a copier and it came out. If you're going to have, you can have members in to constitute a board, and you're putting some effort to define those members. You know, I was just hoping that there was actually some forethought as to XYZ is where they've done similar things, and we customized it for Minnesota. But I guess I'm not going to actually get that comfort.
Representative Lehman.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of questions. I'm really interested in this. It looks like an interesting, innovative, collaborative. But I'm wondering, I only see one name as an author, Representative Nord. It seems as though this would be something that would attract many authors, so I'm just wondering about that.
Representative Lehman, this is a clone of House File 2449, which includes Representatives Mahoney, Vang, Hewitt, Wasloik, Wolgamott, Tabke, Jay Zhang, Mann, Hornstein, Becker, Finn.
Okay, all right, that answers that question. Mm-hmm. But, all right, then I was looking at the advisory board, and I was noticing that I didn't see any requirements that there be somebody from Greater Minnesota. You know, we're talking about 3M and others that were started in Two Harbors. You know, innovation happens all over the state in some unusual places. But then I notice as I'm quickly looking at this for the first time that really it revolves around workspace in the metro. And so my question is there anything in here for Greater Minnesota, or is this just more of a metro-based program? And it has to do with this committee because I am wondering about the makeup of the advisory board.
No, fair question. Commissioner Grove?
Mr. Representative, it's a fantastic question. And I think it's critically important that we recognize as a state that great startup ideas can come from anywhere. And in fact, most of the outreach and public events we've done, just to kind of start to have conversations about this, have actually been outside of the Twin Cities. We've been in Duluth, we've been in Brainerd Lakes, we've met entrepreneurs across the state. And part of the reason also that we've created this package of educational initiatives within this package is that oftentimes if you're not in metro area, you're not part of the dense networks that Representative Salk mentioned earlier, where you have a buddy who knows how to pitch a venture capitalist and he or she can teach you how to do that. But there are great ideas across the state. And so having these kinds of training programs outside of the Twin Cities that helps entrepreneurs from anywhere in Minnesota start their businesses up is a critically important part. In terms of the advisory board, we do, of course, have this open appointments process that would lead to the complexion of the board. I can only say that with the focus that we have on this program and the governor being who he is from outside of the metro, you can be sure that the advisory board will take a geographically diverse look at how we put together a group of advisors for this, because that's a it's just a big critical objective of the program. So thank you.
Representative Lehman.
All right, thank you. Mr. Chair, and I guess I would love to see maybe that as part of the bill that there be some requirement to make sure, because sometimes we just need to do that to ensure that there is good statewide representation. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Lehman. Representative Tice.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I probably have more comments than questions, but we'll see. Going through this, we just talked about Greater Minnesota. I saw on 4.21 that it says priority shall be given if the applicant is a business or entrepreneur located in Greater Minnesota. So I guess I'm asking, you know, what does that really mean?
Mr. Chair, members.
Representative Noor.
Mr. Chair, this is simply to show that we are interested in providing resources to the Greater Minnesota. That is why we're putting more priority to Greater Minnesota. We don't want the resources just to be spent in the Twin Cities metro area, as has been mentioned earlier on. So this is more intentional, making sure that we take care of the – on the second part, you can see we're also talking about women and minority-owned businesses. So we're prioritizing who should get the resources to do the startup for technology businesses.
Okay, and just so members are aware, too, going forward, I'm hoping to be done. We have two more bills. I'm hoping to be done by about 10 to 3. We do have the room reserved for later, though, if we need to come back afterwards. But I know the State Government Finance Conference Committee is meeting at 3, and we're expected to go back into session at maybe about 5. So just thought I should mention that. But Representative Tice.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Noor, on line 5.15, it talks about a grant up to $7,500 to reimburse. My question is, why children up to 26 years of age? It includes housing, child care expenses, health care for the entrepreneur's spouse, or children 26 years of age or younger. That's a lot. That's pretty old. I mean, I would think that it would be under 18, not 26. So I guess I'm just a little confused why we would reach out to children 26 years of age or younger.
Representative Noor?
Mr. Chair and members, I think this goes through the process of the Affordable Care Act, whereby it covers children up to age 26 if they're in college. You know, that may be the definition which we haven't specified, but this is more about the up to 26-year-old who's in college.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Representative Tice?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not really sure if this is probably more the commissioner. I'm looking at the advisory board. And again, one of the things, I'm from St. Cloud, one of the things I hear a lot is the money stays a lot in the metro area, and that's why I was very interested to see that Greater Minnesota gets a priority. But yet we're not saying where any of the members come from. And I guess that is a very big concern of mine to have 10 members, 6 who must be from the private sector, but we're not saying that some of them need to be in Greater Minnesota. You named quite a group, you know, Duluth, Brainerd, I'm going to include St. Cloud, Rochester.
Yeah.
It just surprises me we don't see language for that. So what are your thoughts? I mean, are you thinking that we would have people from Greater Minnesota without actually spelling it out in the bill?
Representative Noor?
Mr. Chair, Representative, this is, you know, the intention. If you go through the process, it says appointee shall represent a range of interests, which includes a variety of things. And I can assure you, having people who want to participate in the process, the commissioner, through the open process, will, as we've discussed a few minutes ago, will give priority to folks who are interested from Greater Minnesota.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Noor, I'm looking at the cost, too, and I'm looking at starting on, 7.13. You know, we're looking at 5% for department administrative costs and then $850,000, and then we're looking at another 5%. That adds up to, 21% of the funds are just for administrative costs. That sounds like a lot.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Noor?
The 5% is on the 750,000, which is the activities, the guarantee activities, but the department has got annual, each year will receive 850 for the staff who will be working on this collaborative.
Okay. Representative Tice?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Noor, but when we look at 5% of the 2.9 million would be 145,000, and then when we look at the next one, starting on 7.18, we got 750,000. And 5% of that is another 40,000. So, you know, that's 185,000 just from the 5% totals, plus the other is a lot of money. So I guess that's just really concerning for me to see that.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, I mean, it's not a cumulative. You don't add together the sure. it should be less than 5%, I would think. But anyway, it's getting a little beyond the government operations talking about the finances, but I don't know any response quickly.
Mr. Chair, Representative
Commissioner Grove.
Yeah, I would just say that the administrative costs seek both to ensure that we can deploy this capital quickly and effectively into the right startups and entrepreneurs, but also so that the staff itself become part of the ecosystem building that Representative Salk talked about earlier. And their location outside of the DEED offices in the community across the state working entrepreneurs is a big part of ensuring that no matter where you're from, whether you're from St. Cloud or from Minneapolis or from Duluth or Brainerd, you know about these programs and are aware of them and can take advantage of them. So that's a piece of this administrative cost that we think is critical.
Okay. Representative Tice?
Mr. Chair and Commissioner, I would just say that when I look at how many employees there's supposed to be, there's one executive director and no more than two staff. So is this including staff from DEED?
Commissioner,
Mr. Representative, the three hires, the three FTEs for this would be DEED staff, yes.
Okay, I don't have any other members on the list. Representative Heinrich?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to go back real quick. Representative Tice raised a question. I don't know if you probably answered it, Representative Noor, in regards to at 5.15, again, it says, as I read this, it says the commissioner shall provide a grant up to $7,500 to reimburse entrepreneur for health care, housing, or child care expenses for the entrepreneur, spouse, or children 26 years of age or younger. Each entrepreneur may receive only one grant under this paragraph. My question is could the grant be used to cover the cost of renting an apartment for an entrepreneur's 26-year-old child that has been living independently? So the entrepreneur rents an apartment for their kid, apparently up to 26 years old, they can be reimbursed that $7,500. Am I reading that correctly?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative, and Representative Noor, you may want to speak to this too, but the piece about the children is connected to the child care expenses, and again, we're just going off of the ACA definition there for that age range. So the housing and health care is in commas before that and is a separate item.
Okay, so
Representative Heinrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, yeah, I'm not trying to do a gotcha, so I don't understand. So it says housing, entrepreneur for reimburse entrepreneur for health care or housing, and then I'll skip right to for children 26 years of age or under. So you're saying that's, I understand how that 26 number comes from ACA, but it looks to me here that an entrepreneur could essentially rent an apartment for their 25-year-old kid who lives independently and get possibly qualify for the reimbursement through theirs.
Sure, that's not the case? That's not the case.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. All right, thank you. Representative Vogel, you understand you had a quick...
Yes, Mr. Chair, I do. I have some really serious reservations on this. First of all, we've got over 20% going to administration. We've got all this uncertainty. I'd request a roll call, please.
Okay, a roll call has been requested. I don't have any additional members on the list. So let me see. Any closing remarks? Representative Noor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate your support. This is a much-needed program to give startups a good beginning, so I will ask the members to support this bill.
Thank you. With that, do you need a minute? Okay. The clerk will take the roll. I'll renew my motion that House File 2852 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Ways and Means.
Representative Freiberg.
Yes.
Representative Sauk.
Yes.
Representative Bonner.
Yes.
Representative Beckerfin.
Yes.
Representative Elkins.
Yes.
Representative Gomez.
Yes.
Representative Cagle. Representative Lee. Representative Lilly.
Yes.
Representative Mason.
Yes.
Representative Nelson.
Yes.
Representative Zerwas. Representative Heinrich.
No.
Representative Lehman.
No.
Representative Nash. Representative Quam.
No.
Representative Tice.
No.
Representative Vogel.
No.
Representative West.
No.
Okay, there being 9 ayes and 6 nays, the motion prevails. The bill is on its way. Thank you, Representative Neuer.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Schultz. Thank you for your patience. I will move that House File 2515 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the General Register. Please present your bill, Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Well, thank you for hearing this bill. House File 2515 is a bill that has bipartisan support in the House and in the Senate, and we are here to request that we recognize the importance of the Great Lakes and the St. Lawrence River. So this is an initiative promoted by the Great Lakes Legislative Caucus, which is a committee of the Council of State Government. And we have worked with all the Great Lakes states and the two Canadian provinces to identify a day to recognize the Great Lakes annually. And the date that was selected is September 7th. And this bill is coming to you late because it took some time to agree on a date that worked for all the Great Lakes states and the two Canadian provinces. So I would appreciate your support for this bill, and I would stand for any questions.
Thank you. Is there anyone in the public who would like to speak on House File 2515? Okay. Seeing none, any member discussion? Okay. Seeing none, any closing? Oh, I'm sorry. Somebody, Representative Tice?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just, I hadn't heard, it's going to the General Register after this?
Yes.
Didn't it have to meet deadlines or anything? Or is this the first time it's being heard?
Sure, yeah. The way these bills work after deadline is you just send them, the committee should just sends them to, we've already done this with several bills, you send them to the committee as you normally would, mm-hmm. and then the front desk staff, the House clerk, will determine that it hasn't met deadline, which I'm pretty sure this hasn't. So they will grab it and then send it to the Rules Committee, and then for action to proceed on it, it would need to go through the Rules Committee would need to have a hearing on it. So is that your understanding of what's happening, Representative
Schultz? That's my understanding, Mr. Chair, that it needs to go to Rules Committee before it can come to the floor for a vote.
Yes.
And it's in the Rules Committee in the Senate, I believe, as well.
Okay. Any additional discussion? Okay. Any closing remarks, Representative Schultz?
No, thank you. I just don't want our state to be left behind when all the other states are celebrating this year. So yeah. I hope we can get it done this session.
Yep. Thank you, Representative Schultz. With that, I will renew my motion that House File 2515 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the General Register. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Schultz. Okay. Representative Lilly, House File... Suppose you're on the committee, so you can move. I understand House File 2796 is going to the Committee on Ways and Means. Would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That'll be my motion.
Okay. Representative Lilly moves House File 2796 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Please present your bill, Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 2796 also has bipartisan support in the House and the Senate. And it's pretty straightforward. It's short. That's why they gave it to me. It's one page. So, but it's a big deal. So the MMB is negotiated with our law enforcement employees with the state, and they've reached a tentative agreement. And this is a 245 work group of 245 folks and state troopers, conservation officers, et cetera. And And then the second part is with the State Board of Investments, and these folks maintain salary administration plan, including the employees for that, and the executive director, and they want to make some changes in that. With me today, just in the sake of time, I could get more deeper, but I have Mr. Hubinger, and I'd just like him to kind of go through what the bill actually does, and we could then stand for questions.
Sure. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm Greg Hubinger with the Legislative Coordinating Commission and staff, the Subcommittee on Employee Relations. Representative Lilly's bill ratifies two agreements. The first is with the Law Enforcement Association. As he indicated, it includes the state troopers, the conservation officers, BCA agents, and a number of specialist agents in a number of other agencies. This contract is for the current biennium, so it has 1 month left. It's the last contract for in the 10 contracts for state employees. This contract is similar to the other contracts that have been approved and ratified by the legislature last session. It provides for a 2% across the board in FY18 and a 2.25% across the board increase in FY19, and also provides step increases based on merit in each year for those law enforcement officials who are eligible for them. That adds about 4% for those employees. It also includes the paid parenting leaves that were provided in the other contracts, and it deals with a study of compensation relationships for state troopers, which has been an ongoing issue for that contract. The second section ratifies a compensation plan for employees in the State Board of Investment. It covers about 14 of 22 employees in that office that manages the state's pension portfolio. That plan provides for salary increases each year based on performance and cost of living. It also implements a study that was done by the board by an independent organization of compensation relationships. They found that the jobs in this office are below market, and so the study recommended increases in the salary ranges for those positions. The compensation study itself doesn't actually increase any salaries per se. It increases the ranges. Mr. Perry from the board is here if you want details about that plan or the compensation study.
Okay. Thank you. Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to testify regarding House File 2796? Seeing none, we'll turn to member discussion. Two members on the list, Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I must have a defective copy because on line 1.7, it doesn't have a date. It's that just has dots.
Oh, yeah. Mr. Hubinger or Representative Quam?
Mr. Chair, members, this bill was amended in when it was introduced and included in Senator Representative Nelson's omnibus State Government Finance.
Don't tumult me like
And I don't know what that date is off the top of my head. It could be corrected in the Ways and Means Committee.
Sure. Yeah, this is being referred to the Ways and Means.
Mr. Chair, since the author of the other bill where the information has been put in, I mean, I would think it would be a technical correction, but it'd be nice to actually have that on here. I just get queasy that we're agreeing to something that, according to the information I have here, hasn't yet been submitted or might be submitted or, you know, dots are, we're late in the session to have dots.
Mr. Hubinger, I guess one question. I mean, this does state the labor agreement between the Law Enforcement Association submitted to the Legislative Coordinating Commission Subcommittee on Employee Relations in 2019. I assume there's only one labor agreement that fits that description, so there wouldn't be any ambiguity even without the date on that. Is that an accurate statement?
Mr. Chair, that's accurate.
Okay. I mean, I guess personally, I don't feel like there's any doubt what we're talking about. I mean, I agree that would be a technical correction, which I'd certainly be happy to entertain if we have the date, but
Mr. Chair, I was hoping to get the comfort of being reassured by the distinguished gentleman at the table that it had been submitted at a meeting, and you know, just that reassurance, because I hate agreeing to, you know, saying we're going to accept this agreement not knowing that it's been submitted or reviewed.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Quam. Representative Nelson?
Mr. Chair, my question was the same line, and I think the date was March 14th or something like that. But it's, like I said, I know it's in the bill, it's the language that's in the state government finance bill has the date, but I can't, I think it's March something.
Yeah, again, I mean, just so the public is clear, there's no ambiguity about what we're talking about. There's only one labor agreement that fits this description, so we can plug it in at a subsequent date. Representative Lilly.
Mr. Chair and Representative Quam and members, my apologies. I noticed it when I was going through the bill and looking at it, and I should have done further homework, so that's on me and my apologies. But I think it's I think you can vote for this in comfort, and I wouldn't be too concerned about it. But that's up to you, of course.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Is there any additional member discussion?
Okay. Representative Quam? I appreciate Chair Nelson clarifying, and I take his reassurances to heart.
Thank you, Representative Quam. I think we're comfortable with it. Any closing, any additional member discussion? Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not sure if it's Mr. Hubinger or not, but there was a summary of the policy changes on the investment to State Board of Investment. And I was just curious on that chart. I thought maybe it would be included in the packet. It wasn't. So I'm looking at it at a distance that I can kind of focus. Just curious, there's a lot of numbers that are underlined, and then there are some crossed out on that. What is the significance of those different? Is that all new information that didn't exist before underlined, or was it there before with the strikeout, and now that's going to be the new numbers?
Mr. Hubinger.
Mr. Chair and Representative Vogel, I think you're referring to the proposed salary ranges for the SBI compensation plan. The numbers that are crossed out indicate that they're existing ranges that are being updated with the new numbers from the market study. The names of the classifications that only have one number for the minimum, midpoint, and maximum are new positions that are mid-level, which is intended to provide a career path for their investment analysts. They're having difficulty with a career track for them, and so they're proposing a number of new classifications that they can use.
Representative Vogel?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I notice Mr. Perry is in the audience, but there is a significant range adjustment for the executive director on the top end of $150,000 here. It's just a number that pops out at me as being rather large. Because the only other adjustment is in the chief investment operations officers, which are rather, one is going up 20, one is going down 7, and one is going down $408 at the different ranges. So that was a curiosity. Are we adding a bunch of new positions or reclassifying a lot of people that are already there? I'm just looking for relative that we're trying to maybe sometimes flatten this a little bit in the pay ranges.
Mr. Hubinger?
Mr. Chair, Representative Vogel, the plan per se isn't adding positions. It is adding a number of ranges that would provide a career track for their investment staff. I understand that the board has budgeted for 30 staff, and they would be allocated amongst these ranges.
Representative Vogel?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess it was just, yeah, there wasn't really anything, I appreciate Mr. Perry having stopped by my office, and we did have a conversation with this before. It's just that when I saw this, it was trying to get a relative degree of where things are going compared to the people that are already there, because I do realize that these are specific positions that are somewhat higher to attract. So I guess with that, Mr. Chair, I'm okay.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Vogel. Any additional member discussion? Representative Lehman?
Yeah. Yes. Hi, Mr. Chair. I'm just now getting the information on the pay ranges. I'm just curious, are we in the state of Minnesota? I mean, there's quite a difference between the minimum pay range and the maximum, for instance, about $200,000. It's like quite a bit. Mm-hmm. Are we in Minnesota at the minimum, midpoint, or maximum?
Mr. Hubinger?
Mr. Chair, Representative, are you talking about the current salary paid to
the... To the SBI, to the...
Layman.
Yeah.
I guess this would be to the State Board of Investment.
What I'm looking at is the McLaren study, and it's a salary study, and it shows all the different pay ranges. And I'm just curious, because there's such a variance, of where Minnesota might fall.
Mr. Hubinger?
Mr. Chair and Representative Layman, I can take the first stab, and perhaps Mr. Perry can respond. The current salary for the director is approximately $358,000.
$358,000?
Representative Lane?
Yes.
Okay, so that is a little below the midpoint, actually.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Representative Lane? Okay, thank you. Any additional member discussion? Okay, seeing none, I'll renew my motion that House File 2796 be recommended to pass. I'm sorry, did you have any closing remarks, Representative Lilly?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Briefly, just, the first part was, people that are very vital to our team, the 750 employees that are state troopers and conservation officers. We just lost recently a conservation officer, and we all recognize that, and many others, BCA and on and on. But the second part's very important, too, and Mr. Perry and his team are responsible for $50 billion they're looking at. And, yes, I think, for me, when I first got on the subcommittee employee relations with Representative Vogels and others, I flinched at some of those numbers. But when you look at other states and the comparable, it's maybe, like you just mentioned, in midpoint in the market. And it's so important, $50 billion of responsibility. But thank you, Mr. Chairman. We're sorry to...
It's okay. Thank you, Representative Lilly. With that, I will renew my motion that House File 2796 be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Your bill is on its way, Representative Lilly. At this point, we do not have any additional meetings planned, but I will certainly make sure everyone has as much notice as possible if that does happen in the future. So with that, we are adjourned.